call is now being recorded. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Susan. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the FRN call on the 2nd of February 2012. On the call today, we have Tatiana Kromtseva, Michaela Nalen, James Bodell, and Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marika Koenig and myself, Natalie Pogan. And we have no apologies for the call today. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and over to you.
So this is Marika, and just to note that we do have apologies from Mikey O'Connor, who said he might join later, but in his absence, he basically asked if someone else would be willing to chair. So who would be willing to take it over from here? James, I heard you say before that you weren't shy, so...
I said no one was shy. I'll go ahead and chair. That's fine. Thanks, Marika, and welcome everyone to the fake renewal notices working group, or sorry, drafting team after a prolonged hiatus for the month of January. The agenda is posted in the Adobe Connect on the left-hand side of your screen, and I think the first step order of business is to offer anyone an opportunity to amend or change their SOI. So if anyone has anything like that, please raise your hand.
This is Marika. I'm just very happy to report that actually everyone has completed or updated their statements of interest, so everyone is up to date for so far as I'm aware.
Okay, excellent. Kelly, you want to change your SOI?
I need to update mine slightly because I realized I haven't got this round to doing it yet. I specified the exact shareholding percentage that I held, and I need to modify that slightly, so I'll make that change.
Thank you, Michele. Okay, and then I think it's not always included formally in the agenda, but just a review of the agenda. Does anyone see any errors or omissions in what we want to achieve today? I don't see any concerns there, so we'll proceed. Marika, a question. Is this a one-hour call or a 90-minute call?
This is a one-hour call, as far as I'm aware, but depending on whether people have limitations, if you want to continue, we might check if people have more time.
Okay. Thank you. And then, let's see, confirming the approach and the timeline, we have a document there. I don't know that, I mean, we can put that in the screen. If memory serves, however, that was something that everyone had reached a rough agreement on. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. What's on the screen is actually not a document because it's hard to display in Adobe Connect. It's the mind map that Mikey has done. I think basically the main point is just to confirm that I think it's still the objective of this group to draft a response in time for the Geneso Council to review that at their meeting in Costa Rica. I think that's what we initially set out to do, and I guess now that we'll have a chance to review the responses to the survey, I guess the group will have a better idea whether it's feasible or not, but just to keep that in the back of your mind, I guess.
Okay, thanks, Marika. I appreciate the clarification. So perhaps we can just dive into the meat and potatoes of this working group agenda, which is item number three. Sorry, I'm getting some background noise there. Item number three, where we take a quick look at the survey responses. This is the responses of registrars that we've sent out. I think it was posted sometime in early January. And the survey closed at the first of this month. And Michele and I did, I wouldn't say we were pestering them about that, but we did send a couple of different reminders throughout the time period to the registrars that the survey was open. So with that, we can just take a look as we go right in. Marika, it looks like everyone actually gave us their name as part of the response. Am I reading number one correctly?
This ringing. No, that's not correct. It's a little bit weird because if I look at the survey responses, it tells me that there are 20 complete responses, but when you actually look at the numbers further down, it looks like they're actually 19, or it adds up to the number 19. It's possible that someone, went through the survey and actually didn't save anything, and that's why, or only saved at the end, and that's why the the survey tool gives me 20 as complete responses, but actually only 16 of them left their names, and 15 of those provided as well their affiliation. So, but I think we have 19, if you look at the numbers, completed responses.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that covers kind of the option number one and option number two. And when they say name, they were giving the individual's name in the survey, correct?
Yes, that's correct. You know, one of the reasons I didn't provide that here, and that's maybe a discussion the group wants to have. I don't know if we need it or want to have it, but I didn't really want to put it, you know, on the public mailing list yet, because I don't think we basically said in the survey that we would share their names, or, you know, presumably if people fill in the survey, I guess are comfortable that, you know, the names are there. But at this stage, I thought maybe, you know, we don't really need the names to be able to review the answers. But if people want to see that, you know, I can definitely provide that.
Well, I think even if it were to be published, there probably is little danger in publishing the list of those who responded to the survey, so long as you can't match a specific respondent to a particular data point. And I'm just kind of shooting from the hip here, but it seems like that would be the real discomfort that I would have about making this all public. I think if you say that here are the results and here are the people who participated, I think that would be one thing. But in saying, you know, respondent A answered this question thusly, I think would be a little more of a problem. So, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think that information is only available really in the rough data, so that's indeed something I don't think we should, you know, want to share publicly. But, you know, for the report's sake, I'm happy for the, you know, if we have an next iteration to you know, publish names and affiliations. And indeed, it's not, you know, it might be chance that one of the answers matches the number of the respondent, but in principle, it doesn't track like that.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So can you take us through what are we seeing here with question number three?
So question number three was, we asked basically, what is the source of fake renewal notices, complaints you receive? So 16 responses or 16 people said that customers are their main source, other registrars, one person, and then there were seven who also provided other sources. So as you can see, that probably some responded customers and also added other options there, as the total number doesn't, you know, goes beyond 100%. You know, so some noted we receive them directly, misdirected emails. Three is an incomplete answer. I'm not sure what people wanted to say there. Employees, recipients of the notices who do not know why or what they are receiving. Number six says typically they are resellers or other registrars. And seven says client inquiries.
Okay. So is it possible that number seven and number five are essentially more specific versions of customers, the category response being customers? I don't know. It seems like client inquiries and customers seems definitely. Well, anyway, I don't want to speculate or put words into mouths, but it seems like that some of these possibly could be collapsed into the above categories, except for those that are receiving directly. Okay, so, you know, McKelly, Paul, Tatiana, Barry, anyone have any thoughts on this question or this topic, where they're coming from? McKelly.
Which question are we looking at here? Sorry, because my brain is all over the place today, as most of you know.
No problem. It's number three, question number three, and I just wanted to, you know, before moving on to number four, just make sure everybody had an opportunity to chime in if they...
Yeah, I mean, I had a look over, James, sorry, I had a look over all of the responses to all the questions, and for the most part, the responses are very, very similar to the ones I would have given, well, the ones that I did give. So from my perspective, that makes me a lot happier, because I kind of go, well, okay, so I'm not imagining this. But not much else I can really say, I'm afraid.
Okay. Thanks, McKelly. So it seems like the overwhelming response is that registrars are being alerted to this problem by their customers. Because, I mean, clearly, whatever organization is involved in this is trying to take those customers away. So, and if they succeed, I think that, at least in our case, and I'll go ahead and share this, that the customer is looking to us to help them get their names back. And I think that that's, that in some respects, that's where the genesis of some of these incidents is coming from. So moving on to question number four, do you view the number of complaints, take renewal notices as a burden or a minor issue? I noticed that the way this question is phrased, we don't really offer them the ability to answer that it is a minor issue, unless they were to put not significant or other. But anyway, it looks like not significant was the largest response, followed by closely by significant or extremely burdensome. So I think if you add those together, you almost get a split right down the middle, where some registrars are saying it's not not a problem, and others are saying it's a significant or an extremely burdensome issue. We have a couple of folks who are responding in the other category. One is saying that it's not a significant volume, but when it does happen, it does create significant customer confusion. And the other seems to indicate that it's on a recent upswing, which I think is the next question. I think the takeaway here is that for those registrars who feel it is a burden, I think they feel pretty strongly about that. And for others, it seems like they are, I don't know. I don't know what to take away from this, guys. Halfway down the middle here. Anyone want to chime in on that one? Hi, Paul.
Hey, James, how are you? For the record, Paul Diaz. Look, you know, this is a tricky one, and it seems typical with when we're trying to quantify our data drive, our policy development efforts. You know, the sample we have is 19 responses without being able to match things up to individual registrars. It's very hard to say, are these statistically significant, is it? Are these experiences for the largest registrars deal with the most volume, or perhaps not? I think I'd be careful on however we want to characterize it moving forward. Yeah, I hear the echo too, James. That's not me. In any event, I would just say that, you know, depending how you want to combine the data, some say it's not very significant, almost half. If you combine the folks who feel it is burdensome in some way, you almost get the same percentage. My concern is just, you know, there are members of the community who are going to jump on this if we make the claim that, you know, almost half said that it was a big deal, for example. I guess we just need to be sensitive to the sample size and again, short of being able to say, of those who claim that it was burdensome in some way, and they represent X percent of all names under management, therefore they see a lot of volume, I think we just want to be careful about perhaps overstating how big a problem this might be.
Thanks, Paul. We'll have Marika go next, and then I put myself behind at the bottom of the queue just for a quick observation. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm happy to run through the names of the registrars that responded. It will just take me a few more minutes if you want the data and need to see who actually responded to saying it's a big problem or, you know, significant burden. I can quickly check that and come back to you in 2 minutes on that. Would that be helpful?
You know, possibly. Sure, if it's not too much of a burden, I guess it wouldn't hurt. And that kind of leads into my next question, Marika, which is, or observation, which is kind of tailored to what Paul was saying. I think that the response here might be dependent upon a question that we didn't ask, which is, you know, the question that we did not ask, which is, you know, if a customer, if one of your clients comes to you with one of these, how, you know, what is your practice as far as getting involved? Do you try to help them get the name back? Do you, as a matter of policy, say we can't get involved in those situations because, you know, it could be construed as, you know, some sort of a anti-competitive or whatever? And I think that it might, we might find, and this is speculation, I'm sorry, but we might find that those folks who are responding that it's not very significant might be registrars who either, A, aren't seeing the problem, or, B, when they do see the problem, as a matter of policy, they try not to not because they don't care, but because of the liabilities or concerns about other issues, they maybe just don't get involved. And the ones saying that they are, it is a burden, obviously are seeing the problem and are trying to correct it for their customers and seeing the frustrations and their inability to do so. So maybe, you know, that might drive some of the differences here between the split answer, but of course I don't think we will ever be able to tell that because I think we maybe missed the opportunity to capture that. So a little editorializing on my part there, sorry. Let me move down to item number 5. I think this is hinted at in the previous question, which is, are we seeing any kind of a trend here? Is this sharply up, sharply down, or staying the same? It looks like the most common response is that this is a steady state. I think that perhaps individual registrar experiences may vary depending on whether or not they are the target of that particular month or year, but overall I think we're seeing that this is about the same. There's a couple of folks that answered other. Comes in waves, but overall same level. I think those two are similar, and then too few to comment. Any other thoughts on question 5 before we move on? Okay, question 6. Are you seeing the same players, or are there new ones entering? Is it proliferating? Looks like a split between yes and don't know. Those folks who are saying that it's not proliferating are in the minority. And then the folks who are saying that other are answering with the same entity all the time, which I guess would definitely follow into a no category. That's not proliferating. Almost all are from the Domain Registry of America, Domain Registry of Canada. Some are the same, some are occasionally new. But, you know, what's the takeaway here? That we are seeing that this is roughly a proliferation. I don't know what's the... I'm not sure how to characterize this one. Folks, anybody want to weigh in? Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Paul again. Look, now that Marika's provided us in the chat who the individual registrar respondents were, the companies they represented, I think one of the things that might be going on here is that domain registry of whatever may be driving some of the don't know or different actors because they do operate under different DBAs in different parts of the world. And looking at the list of respondents, we have an overwhelming European representation. So it's quite likely that Domain Registry of America, which is traditionally focused on the United States, registrants, you know, it may not be the same. It could be some other DBA that's operating in European markets, and therefore it makes it difficult to say, is it the same people, because they do operate under a different doing business as name. You know, for all of this, I think we just have a challenge. You know, let's just step back for a moment. Like other working groups that we've had, there are some people who feel very, very passionately that there's an issue here, whatever their issue may be. One registrar could say this is a very significant problem for them, and not that we should downplay or minimize those concerns. The rest of the community, however, will undoubtedly ask, okay, is this really a problem meriting attention and limited resources of the community? And you know, again, just with the stats that we have in front of us, it's hard to make an argument that there's a huge problem that needs to be addressed here. I mean, we're committing our time. You all are committing the time, everybody on the call and whatnot. But I just, you know, wanted to offer this as early in the PDP process as possible, because too often in the past we've seen issues that are driven by a vocal minority consume a lot of time and resources, and when it's all said and done, the rest of the community seems to shrug its shoulders and just go along doing whatever else they were doing. I think we're going to be challenged, probably sooner rather than later, to try to demonstrate that this really is a big problem demanding of our attention.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Good points. And I'm going to go ahead and I'll put myself in the queue here. I mean, good point overall. I think that this is one that if you've been burned by it, then it's the worst thing that's ever happened in the world, and people should do something about it. And if you haven't, then what's the big deal? And it's hard to make that case, I think, even with the gathering of the statistics like this. I personally am coming from an area where I think, and I just want to clarify, I don't think we're actually in a PvP yet. I think this is a follow-up from a pre-PvP from the drafting team, but I think that we could see it going in that direction. And there's a lot of PvPs floating around right now that are competing for the same dwindling pool of volunteers. But having said that, I'm more concerned that we might take a small problem and then create a much bigger issue with the cure. For example, I have a sore thumb, so my solution is to amputate my arm. I'm concerned that that's the kind of thing that could result from maybe overblowing the significance or the frequency of this. But if you are an individual person who has a restaurant who has experienced this, it is a big problem. The other thing I wanted to just mention, and I see he already put his hand up, is that we don't have to speculate on this one. We have an individual representing one of the registrars who did say this was a significant burden. And to your point, I wanted to ask McKelly a specific question, which is, do you see these coming from DROA, DROC, or are they other entities? Is there a domain registry of Ireland or a domain registry of UK? Or are there other flavors of this outside of usual suspects?
Nope. DROA, DROA, DROA. It's the same entity all the bloody time. I mean, I understand and appreciate the entire thing about whether a PDP or whatever is the solution, but I would be very vocally opposed to kind of brushing this under the mat and saying this isn't a problem. DROA and DROC or whatever the hell they want to call themselves, they've been doing the same thing for years. CIRA were able to deal with the issue in Canada. I think, ICANN should be able to deal with it too. If a CCTLD can manage it, I don't understand why ICANN can't manage it. Whether that's via a PDP, I don't know, because to be perfectly honest, whether it falls within the scope of what is covered by PDPs or not, I'm not the best person to answer that. But it's what entities like this are doing has a negative impact on the entire industry, and I think that's something that does need to be dealt with. I mean, we've all got enough challenges facing us without this kind of behavior. Thanks.
Thanks, McKelly. Paul, do you mind if I go to Marika? I see you next in the queue.
Sure.
Okay, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Basically, to build on a comment you made as well, that indeed we're not in the PDP stage yet. At this stage, it's indeed the council has requested this group to, gather some further information from the registrar stakeholder group in order to help inform them on whether to initiate a PDP or not. But my assessment is as well that, the council would welcome if there are any other kind of recommendations that they might want to consider if, the group deems that a PDP might not be the right approach. And one thing I've, been thinking about, and someone mentioned as well, there are, a lot of PDPs that are gearing up, are in line for competing resources. And one of those is, for example, the PDP on the RAA. And, in some of the questions that have been asked to staff on the current status of the RAA, can we enforce? And I think we've come back as well saying, well, there's nothing specifically in there at the moment about fake renewals, renewal notices itself. So another avenue that the group might want to explore is that would that be an issue that might be suitable to be added to that PDP and saying, we think, you know, the only way to maybe address this or really be able to tackle this would have to, you know, would be to have something specific in the RAA that, you know, basically forbids registrars or resellers to send fake renewal notices, and that would, you know, give ICANN then a tool if that is violated. So that might be another approach to think about, you know, when you think about, you know, the results of the survey and, you know, people like Michaela saying this is a big issue and, you know, we do want something to be done about it. So, you know, just keep that in your mind that there might be as well other approaches than yes, PDP or no PDP. There might be other ways that it could be addressed possibly.
Thanks. I just personally would hate to see that happen. I just get a chill down my spine every time we try to cram policy issues into specific contract provisions. I think it's less participatory and it's less transparent than the process that's been designed, but that's just me editorializing. Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, James. Paul again. Absolutely agree with the last point you made. I think this group, whatever our current status is a drafting team. That might be something that we specifically make mention in our final recommendations, that contractual obligations do not necessarily equate PDP process, and we should be very cautious about using less transparent, less community-based decision-making tools for important issues. More importantly, want to agree with Michaela and make clear for the record, I was not in any way intended to diminish the importance of this issue. As a longtime employee of a large registrar, we saw a lot of this. I do agree with what others have said. It's easy to... I think there are relatively simple ways to address this. A lot of it can be done with tools that already exist or are being put in place, and that gives me an opportunity to thank Marika for responding to my note on the email. And I would just say for the group, be aware that the compliance staff right now is working on a methodology, a process based on their existing authority under the current RAA to suspend non-compliant registrars for a certain period of time. It's an informative stage, but I think that it's important to note that as the efforts of this draft team and other things are going forward, that is also happening in the background, and that there will be opportunities or avenues. So, again, it might not require additional tinkering with contracts. It might not even require a PDP. Hopefully these things will work in tandem and come together so that we can all be, you know, fully informed of what's going on and make recommendations based on that information.
Thanks, Paul. I put myself in the queue because I can't express enough how much I agree with what your last statement. And I think it really supports what McKelly was saying about, you know, Canada was able to do something, not through policy, but through the registry taking unilateral action against one of its so this is a registry policy as opposed to any other kind of thing. And then I think that the same thing happened in the UK, but it was done through a different organization, through, for example, some sort of a standards body for advertising practices. So maybe those are examples of non-policy, non-contractual ways that registries government authorities can get involved here and, you know, put the smack down on the folks. It sounds like we, you know, in general, we know where these are coming from. And so maybe that's one avenue. McKelly, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, it was the Advertising Standards Authority who, you know, published a decision stating clearly that... that it was false advertising. I mean, it's because the thing is, I mean, you see the same kind of methodology used by those companies that send round the search engine positioning things or the directory listings. And, you know, the entire thing is worded to give an impression of, well, it's one thing, and then it's all the nasty stuff that people probably should read is hidden in, you know, very fine print that most people don't actually read. In terms of how best to deal with it, I think, you know, maybe there is something that can be done. But I would agree with you, James. You know, shoving something into the RAA probably isn't the best way of doing it, because if it's, you could easily end up in a situation where the wording causes problems for legitimate actions. Sorry, I'm shivering here because this house seems to be freezing and the heating isn't working particularly well. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the best solution is, but I think, you know, maybe it's a case of simply, you know, taking this question further beyond just the registrar stakeholder group, and that, you know, talking to the non-contracted parties and asking them, do they see an issue? Are they and their contacts, their stakeholders, are they being hit up with lots and lots of these vague renewal notices, or are they completely oblivious to it?
A good point. Thanks, Michele. Okay, well, we kind of got off track here a little bit, but I think that we were finishing up the discussion about question number six. So moving on to question number seven here, and we can hopefully get through the survey today, and that'll be our gift to Mikey. Where are these fake renewal notices coming from? An ICANN entity, registrar, reseller, or other? Looks like the majority are coming through as a reseller. I would point out that registrar is an ICANN connected entity, so maybe topic one and topic two are responses are basically equivalent, but we don't have that issue because we have zero responses for the first one. But for those folks answering other, and we should take a look at these because they represented a significant minority of the respondents. One says mostly resellers. One specifically names Brandon Gray, name use, or possibly reseller thereof. It's the Domain Registry of America, Domain Registry of Canada, Domain Registry of Europe. I hadn't heard that one before. Uncertain was one of the responses. Domain Registry, another vote for DROA. Another response was that they were assuming it was a reseller, and another one is not sure. So it seems like this question is saying pretty emphatically that it is relative to resellers, and there's a couple that are named specifically, and then I think that in addition to item number two, I think would probably fall under the category of a registrar. So we could probably bump that one up to eight and take possibly the other one as, you know, like one, three, five and six would increase the count for reseller. So it still seems like resellers are the most prevalent. I don't know. Anyone have a different take or take away from that question, or should we move on to question number eight? Go ahead, Michele.
I think the thing about resellers is because I think a lot of people still assume that DROA are a reseller and aren't using an accreditation, because they were a reseller of several registrars in the past. At least that's how I might interpret that. I mean, obviously, I could be completely wrong, but I think a lot of people have perceived them as being a reseller as opposed to actually having their own accreditation.
And they do have an accreditation, correct?
As far as I'm aware, yes. I believe it's Brandon Gray. I think that's Name Juice or something like that, and I could be completely wrong. But I think
that's
somebody else actually put it down there as saying that names are lost in this way end up at Brandon Gray, Internet DBA, Name Juice.
Yeah, I think it's a straightforward process that when you lose a name like this, a customer brings it to your attention, you do a quick who is look up and find out, you know, where did it go.
Sorry, James, just to cut across you, but if you actually look at CIRA published a load of the documentation and evidence that they had collated, which includes a lot of the interrelations between various entities and people, not only indirectly in relation to their activities around domain names, but, you know, other activities as well. So, I mean, the question I suppose that I I'd ask is, you know, has ICANN compliance looked at those and found anything that would actually be in breach of any terms of the RAA? And if it isn't in breach of the RAA, is it in breach of any registry contracts? Which, of course, is punting the question straight over to Paul.
So this information is available on CIRA's website, McKellen?
Yep. Their legal team published the entire, a whole load of their submissions. And it's the submissions from the CIRA side, not any responses from the DROC side.
Okay.
But it kind of puts together things like, you know, who's related to who, I mean, as in literally related, and which entities were related to others, and you know, various other things. I mean, things like, you know, multiple entities sharing the same address, and no, the address in question wasn't of a lawyer's firm before anybody suggests that it was. It's quite a bit of documentation, but I mean, it's something. They do expose, and they do have quite a bit of information about all the kind of activities and interrelated parties that, you know, they were aware of.
Okay, thanks. I know that they CIRA published some justifications, but I wasn't sure if I wasn't aware that that other information. I'll definitely go take a look for it. I don't know if it's necessarily suitable to. Oh, there it is. Reek has already linked it, so I guess it's part of our public record now.
It was there, but it's not there anymore by the looks of things.
Yeah.
Well, we could probably ask CIRA if where it's moved to.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to question number 8. What what countries are these noodle notices coming from? Seems like we've got most coming from the United States. We've got some pretty good solid votes there for Canada and the UK, and then a smattering of locations from other parts of the world or unknown. And I think that fits with what we're seeing in some of the other questions here, is that, you know, without putting too fine a point on it, it seems like it's relatively known where these things are coming from. Question number 9, what mechanism... I'm sorry, go ahead, McKelly.
Sorry, no, it's just the reason why the United Kingdom, for example, would be because for a lot of the stuff that would come to us, both directly and indirectly, they're running it through a UK address. But it's the same entity.
Okay, so you're pointing out that it, you know, just because one person sees it as... It's like the blind men touching the elephant, right? We're maybe seeing it show up in different countries, but it's the same parties that are responsible.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's exactly the same thing. I mean, if I were to scan in, actually, what am I saying? I already have done it. We've scanned in and posted on our blog multiple copies of DROA letters. I mean, for people who are located in the US or Canada, they can compare with the ones they have, and I'd feel very confident that if they're not identical, apart from the address, that they're so close that they're, you know, they're identical for all intents and purposes.
Okay, thanks. And I think you probably make the same case that there is no effective difference between the Canadian entity and the entity in the U.S. Question 9 is for Reese, registrars who have reseller programs. What is the mechanism you use to govern your resellers to prevent them from sending patent renewal notices? You know, whether that's done through the contract or provisions of the contract or limitations, limiting the capacity through the API combination or not applicable. Seems like the... you know, I'd say that half are saying it's not applicable, I'm assuming because they don't offer a reseller program. The half that do are saying that they use either the contract, mainly the contract, it seems, with a couple claiming both the contract and the API. It looks like just one using the API. And then one as something of a trust or honor system. I'm not sure what that response means. But it looks like of those registrars who offer it, the method of choice is to put provisions in their contracts. McKelly?
sorry. I was one of the people who would have said non-applicable, and the reason being that we don't offer resellers a reseller solution, so it didn't apply to us, just by way
okay.
of clarification.
No, thank you. That's a good point. Any other thoughts on this one here? One of the things that jumps out at me is just whether or not solely having provisions in the contract are sufficient. If you have a registrar that has a very, very large and extensive reseller network, then the compliance effort amongst that own registrar leasing its own reseller program might be something that would be called into question. McKelly, is that a new hand or from before?
This is a new hand.
Okay, go for it.
James, if the reseller, in inverted commas, and that's intentional, is just being a reseller in order for it to appear as a separate entity from the actual sponsoring registrar, then why would anybody believe that a contract that existed between the two entities that may, in all likelihood, be the same entity would include any clauses that would limit the reseller, again in large inverted commas, from acting in this manner? I mean, ultimately, what I'm getting at, and I'll be blunter about it, you know, there's no point in really looking at what 900 and whatever odd registrars may do if, realistically speaking, we're talking about one entity that does this, that sends back
yeah.
renewal notices. I mean, is it, so kind of going back to Paul's point about, you know, do we really need a PDP, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, considering that from what most of us seem to have concluded, and from most of our experiences, we're all talking about the same entity, do we really need to either to put some kind of contractual clause or policy in place just for that one entity? It just seems a little bit silly. Surely there must be some way of dealing with it, just to deal with that actual problem. And if there are other entities who are completely unrelated, they're not on anybody's radar at the moment. That's not to say they won't be on the radar in the future, but I'm sure we can probably deal with that then. But at the moment, there's only one entity, one organization that's doing this.
You know, I agree with you, tend to agree with you, McKelly, but that's not, unfortunately, that's not what the data is saying in item number 6, which is saying that we're seeing new ones entering. A couple of them are saying that the vast majority are saying that they're seeing the same entity all the time. But we need to square that away with item number 6, which probably means that they were not aware that the efforts by this particular entity to hide behind all of these DBAs and different accreditations and reseller relationships worked in that particular case, right? It was effective in camouflaging their activities. So, I agree with what you're saying. I just think that we need to take it in light of what we collected in item number 6. And it goes back to, I think, the conversation that you and Paul and I were having just earlier in this call, which is that, you know, why go to the trouble to change the contract, to create a PDP, get registries involved, get compliance involved, if it's really just one entity that is driving 80% of this problem? Okay, so moving on then to number 10, and we can get through this here. But the impact of pick renewal notices, the majority say costs. I think that we allowed multiple responses here, which is why they're not adding up. But two-thirds say that it's higher costs. One-third say lost customers. And then about another half are claiming, picking the box for other responses would be greatest impact is user confusion, questions posed to customer service folks, confusion, frustrated customers, loss of domain, support burden, registrar confusion, wasted time, and time explaining the situation to customers, and confusion. So it sure sounds like it's just messing up the industry as far as the perception of registrants and their competence in this industry's ability to keep things on the up and up. And that's then translating into secondary costs for registrars as far as support costs. I imagine if we sent this over to folks like ALAC or the NOMCOM or something like that, we would see a different type of cost, which is the cost of recovering a domain name, the cost of paying exorbitant fees or whatever to recover it or reestablish it or transfer it again. I just think that all those things are probably the costs that are not being captured since we targeted the survey towards registrars, but I bet you those are out there as well. So wanted to finish up the last question, but I will give anyone an opportunity to chime in on that one. I think the last question is the open-ended one, so we'll spend the last 10 minutes of the call going over that. This is any other comments or topics. Respondent 1, this issue has a negative impact on our entire industry, needs to be stopped. Sierra was able to deal with it. Why can't ICANN? I think we heard that during the call. Notices are very misleading and deceptive, bordering on fraud. There appear to be a number of private lawsuits and regulatory actions regarding this topic, which may help guide the group. And I think that there's a link there to a Wikipedia article. Some notices ask for a search engine renewal, which are drafted to be confusing with renewal notices. They should be taken into account. Now, that's interesting. I hadn't considered, and I'm not sure if we have considered, the scenario where this is combined with renewals or solicitations for other products like search engine optimization or hosting or something like that. So that's something that we should make a note of. Much of the issue dealing with confused customers that renew in good faith and don't realize they have a problem until they're asked to transfer their name or they need to make a change to their registration. The incidence fraud has dropped off somewhat since the introduction of the off-code transfers for COM. That's something I'm not familiar with. I mean, are we saying that this was a much bigger problem in the past when there were no off-codes? That's definitely before my time, so I'll just take that on face value. Go ahead, Mikhail. You have something that you can weigh in on that one?
Yeah, I can weigh in on two of them. Response number 1 is me, for the record. but I think you kind of guessed that. The thing about the off-codes, we saw it happen. Sorry, my throat's gone. We saw it happen with several customers before off-codes were introduced. I can't remember, Paul's been around long enough, he probably remembers the exact day and date it happened. we had the kind of thing where a client who actually was quite a close friend of mine got duped by one of these things, and the domain ended up being transferred over, but luckily they were able to get it back. There's definitely a security idea of it, security
okay.
angle to it.
Thanks. Ugh. Paul saying in the chat that he doesn't remember when auth info codes were required. Do you mean weren't required, Paul?
When the turnover in process.
Okay.
In the past, they were not, or when they became required. I don't remember what that date is. It's a number of years ago now, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's almost right around the time ICANN was born, I think. 2004, Marika's saying.
It might be something that you can figure out if you look back to the original the group that came up with the transfer policy that we currently have. That was, a 2003 time frame?
Mm-hmm.
I think something like that. I think it might have been coincident with that effort.
Possible that other registries were using that unilaterally before it became a policy?
Could be. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so let's jump in here to... number 5, the majority of fake renewal notices from related scams. Original for the organization calling itself Domain Registry of America, a.k.a. Domain Registry of Europe and other names. That certainly seems to be the tone of this discussion, that it's landing on the various names of this one entity. It is item number 6, it is an annoyance, not a major problem. A PDP would be overkill. I think we've discussed that fairly extensively as well. especially if we are, as we're seeing, one entity and all of its permutations are behind a lot of this activity. Sending false notices of any sort should be prohibited in the RAA, and this requirement should be enforced on resellers as well. Resellers could be named and shamed to prevent them from jumping over to a new registrar once they're shut down. This is an interesting concept because it kind of touches on the idea of a reseller blacklist. And I can tell you, I think it's pretty understood, that when we have bad guys that are trying to get into our reseller program and they get kicked out for whatever reason, I mean, we're definitely watching for them to try and join again under another name. I had some concerns about extending that to other registrars or sharing that. I mean, that would be fall under the category of an abuse thing, where we do have some registrars that share notes on, let's say, for example, spammers or people who run malware sites. And maybe this could possibly be an extension of that. I don't know. But, you know, anyway, I think that having ICANN drive that process makes me very nervous. Go ahead, McKelly.
I agree with you 100%, James. I don't think it's appropriate for ICANN to get in, to do that. I think it's something I think it's something that we need to deal with. There are already, you know, several trust networks both for registrars and for other entities involved in dealing with DNS abuse. I think, you know, it's something that also maybe via, I don't know what kind of formal way it could be done, but there might be some. I think it's something that needs to be done in that way, not something that ICANN should really get involved with at all. I don't think it would be appropriate for them to do that, because that's a nasty, slippery slope into all sorts of craziness that would cause us more headaches than anything else.
Yeah, you know, I understand. I think it almost is begging for some kind of a tool for registrars to self-regulate by identifying and kicking out one of their own, which, you know, giving that power to ICANN makes me pretty nervous. So go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, just wanted to agree with both of you guys that it is a slippery slope, very dangerous. That said, for registrars, yeah, communication's key. If registrars communicate to the liaison and, more importantly, to compliance and say, look, we're seeing a pattern, it fits the same DROA and all its DBAs, the same pattern that we've seen, consumer protection agencies have found against these guys. You know, the pressure can come from within the industry, communicated to ICANN. ICANN, clients in particular, then can take certain steps. I mean, I don't want to jump ahead in the group's efforts, but it seems like there are already opportunities for compliance to at least investigate. And if DROA is an example, they, at a point in the past, were an ENOM reseller. When ENOM became aware of all the problems, they kicked them out of the program. And those guys went off and eventually hooked up with Brandon Gray. You know, the community can police itself, and if that's not going to be enough, can go complain to ICANN, who can do the investigation, and hopefully that, too, will be pressure. Essentially make it, you know, nobody wants to deal with those resellers, those problematic people anymore. But certainly want to avoid the slippery slope of a bully pulpit or some way of shaming, because that could too easily be abused.
Right. Okay, thanks, Paul and McKelly. Moving over to item number 8 here. Not a huge issue for us, but in principle, we find this practice objectionable, similar to the slamming practice by long-distance carriers. I notice also that outside of the ICANN circles, this is sometimes called domain name renewal slamming. So I think that if we're not making that connection between this and slamming, the community sure has. And for the non-Americans on the phone or on the call, back when the U.S. deregulated its phone company, there were a lot of fly-by-night long-distance companies that would call you up in the middle of dinner and trick you into switching your long-distance company. And now we have all these procedures and regulations in place that if you want to change a long-distance company, you have to have, like, they have to conference in this third party or something like that. It's kind of weird, but it prevents this idea that you would ever change your carrier without consent, kind of went the way of long-distance phones, and I think mobile phone industry did that in, but anyway. The last response, most of our clients are IT professionals are very wary of any notice not issuing directly from us, so it's only a matter of problem in volume terms, but an annoyance and very bad for industry reputation. So I think that's kind of saying it's we're not a retail registrar, but we agree with the response in number one. So that's the survey. I see if there's some staff responses and follow-up questions. I don't think we have time to dive into those now. We're up against our time limit. So that'll be a good stopping point then for Mikey to take over next Thursday. Before we go, I'll turn the floor over to Marika. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just on the staff responses, I sent some further feedback on list today so people can have a chance to look at that and you know, we can discuss further next week. And I just wanted to confirm, so we have the next call same time next week?
I assume that was the case. I guess I shouldn't have assumed that, but it sounds reasonable.
Okay, we'll confirm that.
Okay, well, thanks, everyone, and thanks for putting up with me, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.
Conference leader, Ms. Glenn DeSant. Call is now being recorded. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Susan. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the FRN call on the 2nd of February 2012. On the call today, we have Tatiana Kromtseva, Michaela Nalen, James Bodell, and Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Natalie Pogan. And we have no apologies for the call today. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and over to you.
So this is Marika, and just to note that we do have apologies from Mikey O'Connor, who said he might join later, but in his absence, he basically asked if someone else would be willing to chair. So who would be willing to take it over from here? James, I heard you say before that you weren't shy, so...
I said no one was shy. I'll go ahead and chair. That's fine. Thanks, Marika, and welcome everyone to the fake renewal notices working group, or sorry, drafting team after a prolonged hiatus for the month of January. The agenda is posted in the Adobe Connect on the left-hand side of your screen, and I think the first step order of business is to offer anyone an opportunity to amend or change their SOI. So if anyone has anything like that, please raise your hand.
This is Marika. I'm just very happy to report that actually everyone has completed or updated their statements of interest, so everyone is up to date for so far as I'm aware.
Okay, excellent. Kelly, you want to change your SOI?
I need to update mine slightly because I realize I haven't got this around to doing it yet. I specified the exact shareholding percentage that I held, and I need to modify that slightly, so I'll make that change.
Thank you, Michele. Okay, and then I think it's not always included formally in the agenda, but just a review of the agenda. Does anyone see any errors or omissions in what we want to achieve today? I don't see any concerns there, so we'll proceed. Marika, a question. Is this a one-hour call or a 90-minute call?
This is a one-hour call, as far as I'm aware, but depending on whether people have limitations, if you want to continue, we might check if people have more time.
Okay. Thank you. And then, let's see, confirming the approach and the timeline, we have a document there. I don't know that, I mean, we can put that in the screen. If memory serves, however, that was something that everyone had reached a rough agreement on. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. What's on the screen is actually not a document because it's hard to display in Adobe Connect. It's the minds map that Mikey has done. I think basically the main point is just to confirm that I think it's still the objective of this group to draft a response in time for the Geneso Council to review that at their meeting in Costa Rica. I think that's what we initially set out to do, and I guess now that we'll have a chance to review the responses to the survey, I guess the group will have a better idea whether it's feasible or not, but just to keep that in the back of your minds, I guess.
Okay, thanks, Marika. I appreciate the clarification. So perhaps we can just dive into the meat and potatoes of this working group agenda, which is item number three. Sorry, I'm getting some background noise there. Item number three, where we take a quick look at the survey responses. This is the responses of registrars that we've sent out. I think it was posted sometime in early January. And the survey closed at the first of this month. And Michele and I did, I wouldn't say we were pestering them about that, but we did send a couple of different reminders throughout the time period to the registrars that the survey was open. So with that, we can just take a look as we go right in. Marika, it looks like everyone actually gave us their name as part of the response. Am I reading number one correctly?
No, that's not correct. It's a little bit weird because if I look at the survey responses, it tells me that there are 20 complete responses, but when you actually look at the numbers further down, it looks like they're actually 19, or it adds up to the number 19. It's possible that someone, went through the survey and actually didn't save anything, and that's why, or only saved at the end, and that's why the survey tool gives me 20 as complete responses, but actually only 16 of them left their names, and 15 of those provided as well their affiliation. So, but I think we have 19, if you look at the numbers, completed responses.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that covers kind of the option number one and option number two, and when they say name, they were giving the individual's name in the survey, correct?
Yes, that's correct. You know, one of the reasons I've didn't provide that here, and that's maybe a discussion the group wants to have. I don't know if we need it or want to have it, but I didn't really want to put it, you know, on the public mailing list yet, because I don't think we basically said in the survey that we would share their names, or, you know, presumably if people fill in the survey, I guess are comfortable that, you know, their names are there, but at this stage I thought maybe, you know, we don't really need the names to be able to review the answers, but if people want to see that, you know, I can definitely provide that.
Well, I think even if it were to be published, there probably is little danger in publishing the list of those who responded to the survey, so long as you can't match a specific respondent to a particular data point. And I'm just kind of shooting from the hip here, but it seems like that would be the real discomfort that I would have about making this all public. I think if you say that here are the results and here are the people who participated, I think that would be one thing. But in saying, you know, respondent A answered this question thusly, I think would be a little more of a problem. So, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think that information is only available really in the rough data, so that's indeed something I don't think we should, you know, want to share publicly. But, you know, for the report's sake, I'm happy for the, you know, if we have an next iteration to you know, publish names and affiliations. And indeed, it's not, you know, it might be chance that one of the answers matches the number of the respondent, but in principle, it doesn't track like that.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So, can you take us through what are we seeing here with question number three?
So question number three was, we asked basically, what is the source of fake renewal notices, complaints you receive? So 16 responses, or 16 people said that customers are their main source, other registrars, one person, and then there were seven who also provided other sources. So as you can see, that probably some responded customers and also added other options there, as the total number doesn't, you know, goes beyond 100%. You know, so some noted we receive them directly, misdirected emails. Three is an incomplete answer. I'm not sure what people wanted to say there. Employees, recipients of the notices who do not know why or what they are receiving. Number six is typically they are resellers or other registrars. And seven says client inquiries.
Okay. So is it possible that number seven and number five are essentially more specific versions of customers, the category response being customers? I don't know. It seems like client inquiries and customers seems definitely well, anyway, I don't want to speculate or put words into mouths, but it seems like that some of these possibly could be collapsed into the above categories. Except for those receiving directly. Okay, so, you know, Michele, Paul, Tatiana, Barry, anyone have any thoughts on this question or this topic, where they're coming from? Michele.
Which question are we looking at here? Sorry, because I'm my brain is all over the place today, as most of you know.
No problem. It's number three, question number three, and I just wanted to, you know, before moving on to number four, just make sure everybody had an opportunity to chime in if they...
Yeah, I mean, I had a look over, James, sorry, I had a look over all of the responses to all the questions, and for the most part, the responses are very, very similar to the ones I would have given, well, the ones that I did give. So from my perspective, that makes me a lot happier, because I kind of go, well, okay, so I'm not imagining this. But not much else I can really say, I'm afraid.
Okay. Thanks, Michele. So it seems like the overwhelming response is that registrars are being alerted to this problem by their customers. Because, I mean, clearly, whatever organization is involved in this is trying to take those customers away. So, and if they succeed, I think that, at least in our case, and I'll go ahead and share this, that the customer is looking to us to help them get their names back. And I think that that's, in some respect, that's where the genesis of some of these incidents is coming from. So moving on to question number four, do you view the number of complaints, sick renewal notices as a burden or a minor issue? I noticed that the way this question is phrased, we don't really offer them the ability to answer that it is a minor issue, unless they were to put not significant or other. But anyway, it looks like not significant was the largest response, followed by closely by significant or extremely burdensome. So I think if you add those together, you almost get a split right down the middle, where some registrars are saying it's not not a problem, and others are saying it's a significant or an extremely burdensome issue. We have a couple of folks who are responding in the other category. One is saying that it's not a significant volume, but when it does happen, it does create significant customer confusion. And the other seems to indicate that it's on a recent upswing, which I think is the next question. I think the takeaway here is that for those registrars who feel it is a burden, I think they feel pretty strongly about that. And for others, it seems like they are, I don't know. I don't know what to take away from this, guys. Halfway down the middle here. Anyone want to chime in on that one? Hi, Paul.
Hey, James, how are you? For the record, it's Paul Diaz. Look, you know, this is a tricky one, and it seems typical with when we're trying to quantify our data drive, our policy development efforts. You know, the sample we have is 19 responses without being able to match things up to individual registrars. It's very hard to say, are these how statistically significant is it? Are these experiences for the largest registrars deal with the most volume, or perhaps not? I think I'd be careful on however we want to characterize it moving forward. Yeah, I hear the echo too, James. That's not me. In any event, the I would just say that, you know, depending how you want to combine the data, some say it's not very significant, almost half. If you combine the folks who feel it is burdensome in some way, you almost get the same percentage. My concern is just, you know, there are members of the community who are going to jump on this if we make the claim that, you know, almost half said that it was a big deal, for example. I guess we just need to be sensitive to the sample size, and again, short of being able to say, of those who claim that it was burdensome in some way, and they represent X percent of all names under management, therefore they see a lot of volume, I think we just want to be careful about perhaps overstating how big a problem this might be.
Thanks, Paul. We'll have Marika go next, and then I put myself behind at the bottom of the queue just for a quick observation. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm happy to run through the names of the registrars that responded. It will just take me a few more minutes if you want the data. I need to see who actually responded to saying it's a big problem or, you know, significant burden. I can quickly check that and come back to you in 2 minutes on that. Would that be helpful?
You know, possibly. Sure. If it's not too much of a burden, I guess it wouldn't hurt. And that kind of leads into my next question, Marika, which is or observation, which is kind of tailored to what Paul was saying. I think that the response here might be dependent upon a question that we didn't ask, which is, you know, the question that we did not ask, which is, you know, if a customer, if one of your clients comes to you with one of these, how, you know, what is your practice as far as getting involved? Do you try to help them get the name back? Do you, as a matter of policy, say we can't get involved in those situations because, you know, it could be construed as, you know, some sort of a anti-competitive or whatever? And I think that it might, we might find, and this is speculation, I'm sorry, but we might find that those folks who are responding that it's not very significant might be registrars who either, A, aren't seeing the problem, or, B, when they do see the problem, as a matter of policy, they try not to not because they don't care, but because of the liabilities or concerns about other issues, they maybe just don't get involved. And the one saying that they are, it is a burden, obviously are seeing the problem and are trying to correct it for their customers and seeing the frustrations and their inability to do so. So maybe, you know, that might drive some of the differences here between the split answer, but of course I don't think we will ever be able to tell that because I think we maybe missed the opportunity to capture that. So a little editorializing on my part there, sorry. Let me move down to item number 5. I think this is hinted at in the previous question, which is, are we seeing any kind of a trend here? Is this sharply up, sharply down, or staying the same? It looks like the most common response is that this is a steady state. I think that perhaps individual registrar experiences may vary depending on whether or not they are the target of that particular month or year, but overall I think we're seeing that this is about the same. There's a couple of folks that answered other. Comes in waves, but overall same level. I think those two are similar, and then too few to comment. Any other thoughts on question 5 before we move on? Okay, question 6. Are you seeing the same players, or are there new ones entering? Is it proliferating? Looks like a split between yes and don't know. Those folks who are saying that it's not proliferating are in the minority. And then the folks who are saying that other are answering with the same entity all the time, which I guess would definitely follow into a no category. That's not proliferating. Almost all are from the Domain Registry of America, Domain Registry of Canada. Some are the same, some are occasionally new. But what's the takeaway here? That we are seeing that this is roughly a proliferation. I don't know what the I'm not sure how to characterize this one. Folks, anybody want to weigh in? Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Paul again. Look, now that Marika's provided us in the chat who the individual registrar respondents were, the companies they represented, I think one of the things that might be going on here is that domain registry of whatever may be driving some of the don't know or different actors because they do operate under different DBAs in different parts of the world. And looking at the list of respondents, we have an overwhelming European representation. So it's quite likely that Domain Registry of America, which is traditionally focused on the United States, registrants, you know, it may not be the same. It could be some other DBA that's operating in European markets, and therefore it makes it difficult to say, is it the same people, because they do operate under a different doing business as name. You know, for all of this, I think we just have a challenge. You know, let's just step back for a moment. Like other working groups that we've had, there are some people who feel very, very passionately that there's an issue here, whatever their issue may be. One registrar could say this is a very significant problem for them. And not that we should downplay or minimize those concerns. The rest of the community, however, will undoubtedly ask, okay, is this really a problem meriting attention and limited resources of the community? And you know, again, just with the stats that we have in front of us, it's hard to make an argument that there's a huge problem that needs to be addressed here. I mean, we're committing our time. You all are committing the time, everybody on the call and whatnot. But I just, you know, wanted to offer this as early in the PDP process as possible because too often in the past we've seen issues that are driven by a vocal minority consume a lot of time and resources, and when it's all said and done, the rest of the community seems to shrug its shoulders and just go along doing whatever else they were doing. I think we're going to be challenged, probably sooner rather than later, to try to demonstrate that this really is a big problem demanding of our attention.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Good points, and I'm going to go ahead and I'll put myself in the queue here. Good point overall. I think that this is one that if you've been burned by it, then it's the worst thing that's ever happened in the world, and people should do something about it. And if you haven't, then what's the big deal? And it's hard to make that case, I think, even with the gathering of the statistics like this. I personally am coming from an area where I think, and I just want to clarify, I don't think we're actually in a PDP yet. I think this is a follow-up from a pre-PDP from the drafting team, but I think that we could see it going in that direction. And there's a lot of PDPs floating around right now that are competing for the same dwindling pool of volunteers. But having said that, I'm more concerned that we might take a small problem and then create a much bigger issue with the cure. For example, I have a sore thumb, so my solution is to amputate my arm. I'm concerned that that's the kind of thing that could result from maybe overblowing the significance or the frequency of this. But if you are an individual person who has a restaurant who has experienced this, it is a big problem. The other thing I wanted to just mention, and I see he already put his hand up, is that we don't have to speculate on this one. We have an individual representing one of the registrars who did say this was a significant burden. And to your point, I wanted to ask McKelly a specific question, which is, do you see these coming from DROA, DROC, or are they other entities? Is there a domain registry of Ireland or a domain registry of UK? Or are there other flavors of this outside of usual suspects?
Nope. DROA, DROA, DROA. It's the same entity all the bloody time. I mean, I understand and appreciate the entire thing about whether a PDP or whatever is the solution, but I would be very vocally opposed to kind of brushing this under the mat and saying this isn't a problem. DROA and DROC or whatever the hell they want to call themselves, they've been doing the same thing for years. CIRA were able to deal with the issue in Canada. I think, ICANN should be able to deal with it too. It's, if a CCTLD can manage it, I don't understand why ICANN can't manage it. Whether that's via a PDP, I don't know, because to be perfectly honest, whether it falls within the scope of what is covered by PDPs or not, I'm not the best person to answer that. But it's what entities like this are doing has a negative impact on the entire industry, and I think that's something that does need to be dealt with. I mean, we've all got enough challenges facing us without this kind of behavior. Thanks.
Thanks, McKelly. Paul, do you mind if I go to Marika? I see you're next in the queue.
Sure.
Okay. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Basically, to build on a comment you made as well, that indeed we're not in the PDP stage yet. At this stage, it's indeed the council has requested this group to, gather some further information from the registrar stakeholder group in order to help inform them on whether to initiate a PDP or not. But my assessment is as well that, the council would welcome if there are any other kind of recommendations that they might want to consider if, the group deems that a PDP might not be the right approach. And one thing I've, been thinking about and someone mentioned as well, there are, a lot of PDPs that are gearing up, are in line for competing resources. And one of those is, for example, the PDP on the RAA. And, in some of the questions that have been asked to staff on the current status of the RAA, can we enforce? And I think we've come back as well saying, well, there's nothing specifically in there at the moment about fake renewals, renewal notices itself. So another avenue that the group might want to explore is that if, would that be an issue that might be suitable to be added to that PDP and saying, we think, you know, the only way to maybe address this or really be able to tackle this would have to, you know, would be to have something specific in the RAA that, you know, basically forbids registrars or resellers to send fake renewal notices, and that would, you know, give ICANN then a tool if that is violated. So that might be another approach to think about, you know, when you think about, you know, the results of the survey and, you know, people like Michaela saying this is a big issue and, you know, we do want something to be done about it. So, you know, just keep that in your mind that there might be as well other approaches than yes, PDP or no PDP. There might be other ways that it could be addressed possibly.
Thanks. I just personally would hate to see that happen. I just get a chill down my spine every time we try to cram policy issues into specific contract provisions. I think it's less participatory and it's less transparent than the process that's been designed, but that's just me editorializing. Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, James. It's Paul again. Absolutely agree with the last point you made. I think this group, whatever our current status is a drafting team. That might be something that we specifically make mention in our final recommendations, that contractual obligations do not necessarily equate PDP process, and we should be very cautious about using less transparent, less community-based decision-making tools for important issues. More importantly, want to agree with Michaela and make clear for the record, I was not in any way intended to diminish the importance of this issue. As a longtime employee of a large registrar, we saw a lot of this. I do agree with what others have said. It's easy to... I think there are relatively simple ways to address this. A lot of it can be done with tools that already exist or are being put in place, and that gives me an opportunity to thank Marika for responding to my note on the email. And I would just say for the group, be aware that the compliance staff right now is working on a methodology, a process based on their existing authority under the current RAA to suspend non-compliant registrars for a certain period of time. It's an informative stage, but I think that it's important to note that as the efforts of this draft team and other things are going forward, that is also happening in the background, and that there will be opportunities or avenues. So, again, it might not require additional tinkering with contracts. It might not even require a PDP. Hopefully these things will work in tandem and come together so that we can all be, you know, fully informed of what's going on and make recommendations based on that information.
Thanks, Paul. I put myself in the queue because I can't express enough how much I agree with what you your last statement, and I think it really supports what Michele was saying about, you know, Canada was able to do something not through policy, but through the registry taking unilateral action against one of its so this is a registry policy as opposed to any other kind of thing. And then I think that the same thing happened in the UK, but it was done through a different organization, through, for example, some sort of a standards body for advertising practices. So maybe those are examples of non-policy, non-contractual ways that registries government authorities can get involved here and, you know, put the smack down on the folks. It sounds like we, you know, in general, we know where these are coming from. And so maybe that's one avenue. Michele, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, it was the Advertising Standards Authority who, you know, published a decision stating clearly that... that it was false advertising. I mean, it's because the thing is, I mean, you see the same kind of methodology used by those companies that send round the search engine positioning things or the directory listings. And, you know, the entire thing is worded to give an impression of that it's one thing, and then it's all the nasty stuff that people probably should read is hidden in, you know, very fine print that most people don't actually read. I mean, in terms of how best to deal with it, I think, you know, maybe there is something that can be done. But I would agree with you, James. You don't, you know, shoving something into the RAA probably isn't the best way of doing it, because if it's, you could easily end up in a situation where the wording causes problems for legitimate actions. Sorry, I'm shivering here because this house seems to be freezing and the heating isn't working particularly well. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the best solution is, but I think, you know, maybe it's a case of simply, you know, taking this question further beyond just the registrar stakeholder group, and that, you know, talking to the non-contracted parties and asking them, do they see an issue? Are they and their contacts, their stakeholders, are they being hit up with lots and lots of these fake renewal notices, or are they completely oblivious to it?
Good points. Thanks, Michele. Okay, well, we kind of got off track here a little bit, but I think that we were finishing up the discussion about question number six. So moving on to question number seven here, and we can hopefully get through the survey today, and that'll be our gift to Mikey. Where are these fake renewal notices coming from? An ICANN entity, registrar, reseller, or other? Looks like the majority are coming through as a reseller. I would point out that registrar is an ICANN connected entity, so maybe topic one and topic two are responses are basically equivalent, but we don't have that issue because we have zero responses for the first one. But for those folks answering other, and we should take a look at these because they represented a significant minority of the respondents. One says mostly resellers. One specifically names Brandon Gray, Name Juice, or possibly reseller thereof. It's the Domain Registry of America, Domain Registry of Canada, Domain Registry of Europe. I hadn't heard that one before. Uncertain was one of the responses. Domain Registry, another vote for DROA. Another response was that they were assuming it was a reseller, and another one is not sure. So it seems like this question is saying pretty emphatically that it is relative to resellers, and there's a couple that are named specifically, and then I think that in addition to item number two, I think would probably fall under the category of a registrar. So we'd probably bump that one up to eight and take possibly the other one as, you know, like one, three, five and six would increase the count for reseller. So it still seems like resellers are the most prevalent. I don't know. Anyone have a different take or take away from that question, or should we move on to question number eight? Go ahead, Michele.
I think the thing about resellers is because I think a lot of people still assume that DROA are a reseller and aren't using an accreditation, because they were a reseller of several registrars in the past. At least that's how I might interpret that. I mean, obviously, I could be completely wrong, but I think a lot of people have perceived them as being a reseller as opposed to actually having their own accreditation.
And they do have an accreditation, correct?
As far as I'm aware, yes. I believe it's Brandon Gray. I think that's Name Juice or something like that, and I could be completely wrong. But I think that's somebody else actually put it down there as saying the names are lost in this way, end up at Brandon Gray, Internet DBA, Name Juice.
Yeah, I think it's a straightforward process that when you lose a name like this, a customer brings it to your attention, you do a quick who is look up and find out, you know, where did it go.
Sorry, James, just to cut across you, but if you actually look, CIRA published a load of the documentation and evidence that they had collated, which includes a lot of the interrelations between various entities and people, not only indirectly in relation to their activities around domain names, but, you know, other activities as well. So, I mean, the question I suppose that I'd ask is, you know, has ICANN compliance looked at those and found anything that would actually be in breach of any terms of the RAA? And if it isn't in breach of the RAA, is it in breach of any registry contracts? Which, of course, is punting the question straight over to Paul.
So this information is available on CIRA's website, McKellen?
Yep. Their legal team published the entire, a whole load of their submissions. It's the submissions from the CIRA side, not any responses from the DROC side.
Okay.
But it kind of puts together things like, you know, who's related to who, I mean, as in literally related, and which entities were related to others, and you know, various other things. I mean, things like, you know, multiple entities sharing the same address, and no, the address in question wasn't of a lawyer's firm before anybody suggests that it was. There's quite a bit of documentation, but I mean, it's something. They do expose, and they do have quite a bit of information about all the kind of activities and interrelated parties that, you know, they were aware of.
Okay, thanks. I know that CIRA published some justifications, but I wasn't sure if I wasn't aware that that other information. I'll definitely go take a look for it. I don't know if it's
necessarily
suitable to. Oh, there it is. Maurice Creek has already linked it, so I guess it's part of our public record now.
It was there, but it's not there anymore by the looks of things.
Yeah.
Well, we could probably ask CIRA if where it's moved to.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to question number 8, what countries are these noodle notices coming from? Seems like we've got most coming from the United States. We've got pretty good solid votes there for Canada and the UK, and then a smattering of locations from other parts of the world or unknown. I think that fits with what we're seeing in some of the other questions here, is that, you know, without putting too fine a point on it, it seems like it's relatively known where these things are coming from. Question number 9, go ahead, McKelly.
Sorry, no, it's just the reason why it's the United Kingdom, for example, would be because for a lot of the stuff that would come to us, both directly and indirectly, they're running it through a UK address, but it's the same entity.
Okay, so you're pointing out that it, you know, just because one person sees it as it's like the blind men touching the elephant, right? We're maybe seeing it show up in different countries, but it's the same parties that are responsible.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's exactly the same thing. I mean, if I were to scan in, actually, what am I saying? I already have done it. We've scanned in and posted on our blog multiple copies of DROA letters. I mean, for people who are located in the US or Canada, they can compare with the ones they have, and I'd feel very confident that they, if they're not identical apart from the address, that they're so close that they're, you know, they're identical for all intents and purposes.
Okay, thanks. And I think you probably make the same case that there is no effective difference between the Canadian entity and the entity in the U.S. Question 9 is for registrars who have reseller programs. What is the mechanism you use to govern your resellers to prevent them from sending patent renewal notices? Whether that's done through the contract or provisions of the contract or limitations, limiting the capacity through the API combination or not applicable. Seems like I'd say that half are saying it's not applicable, I'm assuming because they don't offer a reseller program. The half that do are saying that they use either the contract, mainly the contract, it seems, with a couple claiming both the contract and the API. It looks like just one using the API, and then one has something of a trust or honor system. I'm not sure what that response means. But it looks like of those registrars who offer it, the method of choice is to put provisions in their contracts. McKelly?
sorry. I was one of the people who would have said non-applicable, and the reason being that we don't offer resellers a reseller solution, so it didn't apply to us, just by way
okay.
of clarification.
No, thank you. That's a good point. Any other thoughts on this one here? One of the things that jumps out at me is just whether or not solely having provisions in the contract are sufficient. If you have a registrar that has a very, very large and extensive reseller network, then the compliance effort amongst that own registrar leasing its own reseller program might be something that would be called into question. Kelly, is that a new hand or from before?
This is a new hand.
Okay, go for it.
James, if the reseller, in inverted commas, and that's intentional, is just being a reseller in order for it to appear as a separate entity from the actual sponsoring registrar, then why would anybody believe that a contract that existed between the two entities that may for in all likelihood be the same entity would include any clauses that would limit the reseller, again in large inverted commas, from acting in this manner? I mean, ultimately, what I'm getting at, and I'll be blunter about it, you know, there's no point in really looking at what 900 and whatever odd registrars may do if, realistically speaking, we're talking about one entity that does this, that sends back renewal notices. I mean, so kind of going back to Paul's point about, you know, do we really need a PDP, et cetera, I mean, considering that from what most of us seem to have concluded, and from most of our experiences, we're all talking about the same entity. Do we really need to either to put some kind of contractual clause or policy in place just for that one entity? It just seems a little bit silly. Surely there must be some way of dealing with it, just to deal with that actual problem. And if there are other entities who are completely unrelated, they're not on anybody's radar at the moment. That's not to say they won't be on the radar in the future, but I'm sure we can probably deal with that then. But at the moment, there's only one entity, one organization that's doing this.
You know, I agree with you, or tend to agree with you, McKelly, but that's not... Unfortunately, that's not what the data is saying in item number 6, which is saying that we're seeing new ones entering. A couple of them are saying that it has... You know, that there's, but then I agree. The vast majority are saying that they're seeing the same entity all the time. But we need to square that away with item number 6, which probably means that they were not aware that the efforts by this particular entity to hide behind all of these DBAs and different accreditations and reseller relationships worked in that particular case, right? It was effective in camouflaging their activities. So, you know, I agree with what you're saying. I just think that we need to take it in light of what we collected in item number 6. And it goes back to, I think, the conversation that you and Paul and I were having just earlier in this call, which is that, you know, why go to the trouble to change the contract, to create a PDP, get registries involved, get compliance involved, if it's really just one entity that is driving 80% of this problem. Okay, so moving on then to number 10, and we can get through this here. With the impact of fake renewal notices, the majority say costs. I think that we allowed multiple responses here, which is why they're not adding up. But two-thirds say that it's higher costs. One-third say lost customers, and then about another half ticking the box for other responses would be greatest impact is user confusion, questions posed to customer service folks, confusion, frustrated customers, loss of domain, support burden, registrar confusion, wasted time, and time explaining the situation to customers and confusion. So it sure sounds like it's just messing up the industry as far as the perception of registrants and their confidence in this industry's ability to keep things on the up and up. And that's then translating into secondary costs for registrars as far as support costs. I imagine if we sent this over to folks like ALAC or the NOMCOM or something like that, we would see a different type of cost, which is the cost of recovering a domain name, the cost of paying exorbitant, you know, fees or whatever to recover it, or reestablish it, or transfer it again. And I just think that all those things are probably the costs that are not being captured, since we targeted this survey towards registrars. But I bet you those are out there as well. So, wanted to finish up the last question, but I will give anyone an opportunity to chime in on that one. I think the last question is the open-ended one, so we'll spend the last 10 minutes of the call going over that. This is any other comments or topics. Respondent 1, this issue has a negative impact on our entire industry, needs to be stopped. Sierra was able to deal with it. Why can't ICANN? I think we heard that during the call. Notices are very misleading and deceptive, bordering on fraud. There appear to be a number of private lawsuits and regulatory actions regarding this topic, which may help guide the group. And I think that there's a link there to a Wikipedia article. Some notices ask for a search engine renewal, which are drafted to be confusing with renewal notices. They should be taken into account. Now, that's interesting. I hadn't considered, and I'm not sure if we have considered, the scenario where this is combined with renewals or solicitations for other products like search engine optimization or hosting or something like that. So that's something that we should make a note of. Much the issue dealing with confused customers that renew in good faith and don't realize they have a problem until they're asked to transfer their name or they need to make a change to their registration. The incidence fraud has dropped off somewhat since the introduction of the off-code transfers for COM. That's something I'm not familiar with. I mean, are we saying that this was a much bigger problem in the past when there were no off-codes? That's definitely before my time, so I'll just take that on face value. Go ahead, Michele. You have something that you can weigh in on that one?
Yeah, I can weigh in on two of them. Response number 1 is me, for the record. but I think you kind of guessed that. The thing about the off codes, yeah, I mean, we saw it happen. Sorry, my throat's gone. We saw it happen with several customers before off codes were introduced. I can't remember. Paul's been around long enough. He probably remembers the exact day and date it happened. but yeah, I mean, we had the kind of thing where a client who actually was quite a close friend of mine got duped by one of these things, and you know, the domain ended up being transferred over, but luckily they were able to get it back. So, yeah, that's definitely, I mean, there's definitely a security idea of it, security
okay.
angle to
Thanks.
It.
Thanks. Paul's saying in the chat that he doesn't remember when auth info codes were required. Do you mean weren't required, Paul?
When the turnover in process.
Okay.
In the past they were not, or when they became required. I don't remember what that date is. It's a number of years ago now, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's almost right around the time ICANN was born, I think. 2004, Marika's saying.
You know, it might be something that you can figure out if you look back to the original the group that came up with the transfer policy that we currently have. That was, what, a 2003 time frame?
Mm-hmm.
I think something like that. I think it might have been coincident with that effort.
Possible that other registries were using that unilaterally before it became a policy?
Could be. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so let's jump in here to number 5, the majority of fake renewal node system-related scams. Original for the organization calling itself Domain Registry of America, a.k.a. Domain Registry of Europe and other names. That certainly seems to be the tone of this discussion, that it's landing on the various names of this one entity. It is item number six. It is an annoyance, not a major problem. A PDP would be overkill. I think we've discussed that fairly extensively as well, especially if we are, as we're saying, one entity and all of its permutations are behind a lot of this activity. Sending false notices of any sort should be prohibited in the RAA, and this requirement should be enforced on resellers as well. Resellers could be named and shamed to prevent them from jumping over to a new registrar once they're shut down. This is an interesting concept because it kind of touches on the idea of a reseller blacklist. And I can tell you, I think it's pretty understood, that when we have bad guys that are trying to get into our reseller program and they get kicked out for whatever reason, I mean, we're definitely watching for them to try and join again under another name. I had some concerns about extending that to other registrars or sharing that. I mean, that would be fall under the category of an abuse thing, where we do have some registrars that shared notes on, let's say, for example, spammers or people who run malware sites. And maybe this could possibly be an extension of that. I don't know. But, you know, anyway, I think that having ICANN drive that process makes me very nervous. Go ahead, McKelly.
I agree with you 100%, James. I don't think it's appropriate for ICANN to get in, to do that. I think it's something I think it's something that we need to deal with. There are already, you know, several trust networks, both for registrars and for other entities involved in dealing with DNS abuse. I think, you know, it's something that also maybe via, I don't know what kind of formal way it could be done, but there might be some. I think it's something that needs to be done in that way, not something that ICANN should really get involved with at all. I don't think it would be appropriate for them to do that, because that's a nasty, slippery slope into all sorts of craziness that would cause us more headaches than anything else.
Yeah. I understand. I think it almost is begging for some kind of a tool for registrars to self-regulate by identifying and kicking out one of their own, which, you know, giving that power to ICANN makes me pretty nervous. So go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree with both of you guys that it is a slippery slope, very dangerous. That said, for registrars, yeah, communication's key. If registrars communicate to the liaison and, more importantly, to compliance and say, look, we're seeing a pattern, it fits the same DROA and all its DBAs, the same pattern that we've seen, consumer protection agencies have found against these guys. You know, the pressure can come from within the industry, communicated to ICANN. ICANN, clients in particular, then can take certain steps. I mean, I don't want to jump ahead in the group's efforts, but it seems like there are already opportunities for compliance to at least investigate. And if DROA is an example, they, at a point in the past, were an ENOM reseller. When ENOM became aware of all the problems, they kicked them out of the program, and those guys went off and eventually hooked up with Brandon Gray. You know, the community can police itself, and if that's not going to be enough, can go complain to ICANN, who can do the investigation, and hopefully that, too, will be pressure. Essentially make it, you know, nobody wants to deal with those resellers, those problematic people anymore, but certainly want to avoid the slippery slope of a bully pulpit or some way of shaming, because that could too easily be abused.
Right. Okay, thanks, Paul and McKelly. Moving over to item number eight here. Not a huge issue for us, but we in principle, we find this practice objectionable, similar to the slamming practice by long-distance carriers. I notice also that outside of the ICANN circle, this is sometimes called domain name renewal slamming. So I think it's I think that if we're not making that connection between this and slamming, the community sure has. And for the non-Americans on the phone or on the call, back when the U.S. deregulated its phone company, there were a lot of fly-by-night long-distance companies that would call you up in the middle of dinner and trick you into switching your long-distance company. And now we have all these procedures and regulations in place that if you want to change a long-distance company, you have to have, like, they have to conference in this third party or something like that. It's kind of weird, but it prevents this idea that you would ever change your carrier without consent. Kind of went the way of long-distance phones, and I think mobile phone industry did that in, but anyway. The last response, most of our clients are IT professionals and are very wary of any notice not issuing directly from us, so it's only a matter of problem in volume terms, but an annoyance and very bad for industry reputation. So I think that's kind of saying it's we're not a retail registrar, but we agree with the response in number one. So that's the survey. I see that there's some staff responses and follow-up questions. I don't think we have time to dive into those now. We're up against our time limit. So that'll be a good stopping point then for Mikey to take over next Thursday. Before we go, I'll turn the floor over to Marika. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just on the staff responses, I sent some further feedback on list today so people can have a chance to look at that and you know, we can discuss further next week. And I just wanted to confirm, so we have the next call same time next week?
I assume that was the case. I guess I shouldn't have assumed that, but it sounds reasonable.
Okay, we'll confirm that.
Okay, well, thanks, everyone, and thanks for putting up with me, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.